Welcome back to the Isms and Schisms podcast. This is the second episode, so I'm assuming you enjoyed the first one. If you haven't listened to that first episode, and this is the first Isms and Schisms episode you've listened to, then you're a lunatic. Who starts at episode 2? Get out of here. Go back and listen to number 1. Unless you started here and then went back to number 1 and now you've returned to listen to episode 2 properly. Welcome back. Or of course, you just have a specific interest in this topic. I hope I can do it justice. This week we're exploring what is called the papal schism. Basically, what happens is that 3 different popes from 3 different nations battle it out to ascend the Iron Throne. I mean, the chair of Peter. This event had repercussions for the church for centuries to come, so let's dive into this epic contest of the papal bishops. When you play the Game of Thrones, you win, or you become an anti-pope. Papal Schism occurred in the 14th and into the 15th century, and is also known as the Western Schism, or the Great Western Schism, or sometimes even just the Great Schism. Not to be confused with the Great Schism, also known as the East-West Schism. It gets a bit confusing, but to make matters worse, everyone is named the same. We've got Gregory the 11th, then Gregory the 12th, and we've got John the 23rd. To make it even more confusing, many years later, another pope chose the name John 23rd, because the first 23rd John is now considered an anti-pope. This also happened with the name Benedict the 13th. There's 2 Benedict the 13ths. It's as bad as House of Dragons. So, if you're still with me, let's unpack this. Let's get into this schism. But first, we need to backtrack a little bit. In 1294, Boniface VIII was elected pope. Wanting to make changes in the church, he became very politically active. He launched a crusade against an opposing family in Italy, successfully pushing them into exile. He denounced a rebellion in Germany, and he mediated a conflict between England and France. Tensions were growing with France, and relationship between the pope and the French king Philip IV soured. So the Pope made alliances with the very same German he had previously denounced.
Oh no, you don't.
And he made peace with the English.
Oh no, you don't.
The French then called the Pope a false Pope. In response, the Pope made plans to excommunicate Philip.
Oh no, you don't.
We might explore excommunication in a later episode, but it basically means cutting someone off from the church. Getting wind of this, a small band of Frenchmen kidnapped the Pope. They wanted him to abdicate, but Boniface refused and said that if they wanted to kill him, here is my neck, here is my head, which is honestly pretty badass. They didn't kill him, but they sat him backwards on a horse and paraded him around town, thus humiliating him, from which he never really recovered. He was rescued and the French were kicked out, but he never held the same respect, and he died shortly later. Following Boniface, Benedict XI, the man responsible for freeing Boniface, was elected pope. His pontificate did not last long, dying less than a year later. Some suspect he was poisoned. Through clever political manoeuvring, a Frenchman became pope, taking the name Clement V. Clement moved to the French town of Avignon, which is actually a lovely town in southern France, and I really recommend a visit. And Clement never visited Rome. Between the years 1309 and 1376, there were 7 popes who all resided in Avignon. This is known as the Avignon Papacy, or by some as the Babylonian Captivity of the Papacy, which is pretty dark. This period is marked by an increase in corrupt policies, including nepotism, which means granting family members or friends position of power rather than giving these positions to people who deserve them, and increasing the taxation of ordinary people, as well as introducing various fees. The papacy in Avignon became very wealthy, and actually rather lazy. Another issue was that some of the clergy just didn't show up. So the people started to resent the papacy in Avignon. Toward the end of this Avignon papacy comes a young woman from a family of 25 children who would become known as Saint Catherine of Siena. She became a member of the Third Order of Saint Dominic, and at the age of 21, she had a vision in which she married Jesus. But instead of receiving a ring of gold or silver, she received Jesus's invisible foreskin. Invisible foreskin. I had a joke to put in here, but I actually had to cut it off. So I'm just going to move straight on. Catherine was a tireless worker for the poor. She performed miracles, and she taught mysticism to many men and women. In 1370, Gregory the 11th was elected pope, and Catherine had another vision. She lay still for 4 hours, and friends thought she had died. But she woke, and she declared that the papacy must return to Rome. She wrote to the pope, stating as much, and arguing that it would be easier for the pope to achieve peace among the Italian city-states if he was, in fact, in Italy. Over the next several years, she called on Gregory to reform the church in various ways, and she also travelled around, urging peace and gathering support for her vision to be fulfilled. How much of an influence she actually had on the Pope is unclear, but Gregory did in fact return the papacy to Rome in 1377. However, the political landscape was still as volatile as it was in 1309, and Gregory even considered returning to Avignon. But he died in 1378, leaving the chair of Peter empty. And this is the historical context that led to what is known as the Papal Schism, to which we now finally turn. With the papacy empty, the Italians were worried about a French pope being elected and moving the papacy back to Avignon. And the French were worried about an Italian pope and losing the power and privileges that they had been enjoying for several decades. The French cardinals outnumbered the Italians, and some were concerned that the French would just sneak off and clandestinely elect a French pope. So a riot broke out, and a mob stormed the building where the cardinals would vote on a pope and would not leave until they were satisfied that the French could not escape. The mob also wanted an Italian pope, and so the French were afraid of voting for a Frenchman. Ultimately, Urban VI, an Italian, was elected as pope. In comparison to the French popes, he was humble and austere, and he clashed with many of the cardinals. He did not really even attempt to be subtle in his politics, but was rather blunt and authoritarian. He condemned the luxurious lifestyles of the Avignon papacy. He said that those who were not showing up to fulfill their roles were betraying Christ, and those who bought their way into positions of authority, a practice known as simony, were to be excommunicated. He appointed a large number of Italian cardinals, including some relatives, which is nepotism, precisely what he accused the others of doing. So people were not overly happy. Many thought he had gone mad. If you Google mad pope, Urban VI will be the first one to pop up. So we have a mad pope, and I really wasn't expecting this episode to have such a Game of Thrones vibe. So the French cardinals, along with some Italians, gathered, and together they declared that they were coerced into voting for Urban, which honestly, they kind of were. They were surrounded by an intimidating pro-Italian mob when they voted. If it weren't for all the greed and corruption of the Avignon papacy, I'd probably be Team Avignon right now. But these defectors said that Urban was a false pope, and so they voted for a new one, who took the name Clement VII. He wasn't especially known for his piety, but was a good diplomat, and by taking the name Clement, he was declaring his intentions to return to Avignon and to continue the policies of the Avignon papacy. So for the first time in history, there were two popes, both elected by the same people, both insisting on their continuity with the line of popes, and both declaring the other invalid. This is the crux of the papal schism, and as we can see, it was a very awkward time. This split the whole of Western Europe, with different nations supporting a different pope. Catherine of Siena initially supported Urban, but could not continue this support when Urban started a series of conflicts. He even had some cardinals who suggested he dial back the violence, arrested and tortured, supposedly complaining when they did not scream as loudly as he wanted them to. This schism lasted several decades, and a new pope was elected to replace each of the previous popes. So following Urban, upon his death, came Boniface the Ninth, and then Innocent the Seventh, and then Gregory the XII. In Avignon, Benedict the XIII replaced Clement. Now, the University of Paris suggested, as a way to heal the schism, that both popes abdicate, and that they then elect a new pope.
That's a good idea!
But the French cardinals were not overly happy about this, and so they elected Benedict. Because of this, the French crown withdrew its support of the Avignon papacy and laid siege to the papal palace in Avignon. Benedict managed to escape and held out until sentiment turned back in his favour and the French submitted to him again. In 1406, the Roman Pope Gregory began negotiations with Benedict, but these failed. So the cardinals from each papacy, who were getting sick and tired of their respective popes' obstinacy, took matters into their own hands and called for a great council. They met in Pisa in 1409, where they decided that it was too difficult to determine who was the real pope, and so both should be deposed and a new one elected. So they elected a new pope, Alexander V. So for those of you keeping score, there are now three popes. But it got worse. The popes refused to abdicate and refused the legitimacy of the council. Then Alexander died less than a year later, and the first John 23rd, was elected. But he was forced to flee and take refuge in Germany. So they called for another council, which met in Constance in 1414. John fully expected everyone to support him. After all, this was their decision and they had voted for him. But they did not, because they did not approve of his lavish lifestyle, and they tried to force him to resign, but he ran away. Several months later, he was captured and returned to Constance, where he was forced to resign. Gregory, the Roman Pope, also resigned, as he had promised, if the other popes resigned. Benedict, the Avignon Pope, did not resign and ran off to Spain, where he lived until 1423. Basically, everyone just forgot he even existed, and they ignored him, and no one was elected to replace him. Back in Constance, the council elected a new pope, who took the name Martin V, and thus ended the papal schism. The major implication of this event for history is what is called conciliarism, which we might explore in another episode, but it basically prioritizes a council over the individual pope. And ever since, there has been a bit of a tension between the cardinals and convoked councils and the pope himself. This has usually been a good relationship, but there are some moments where that tension is strained. But that's a story for another day. All of these events, from the corrupt practices of the Avignon papacy to the inner turmoil of the papal schism, are part of what led to the enormous events that would soon come in and following the Protestant Reformation. There was a growing resentment toward the bishops who cared more for power and money than actually doing the work of the church. But I should note that though events like the papal schism were wide-ranging, there were many, many people within the Catholic Church who also wanted reform, who were genuinely trying to be good Christians, follow their conscience, and fix the problems within the church. I think that's what we have to do when we look at history. The big names that we remember, like Urban VI or Benedict XIII or Alexander V, are not necessarily representative of the general Christian public. At this time, there was a real groundswell toward Reformation, just waiting for a spark, which eventually came in Wittenberg, Germany, 1517. But we'll unpack that in another episode. So thank you for listening to this episode. I hope you found it as interesting and informative as I did reading up on this. Remember to subscribe or follow. Check out the website and Instagram, the details for which can be found in the show notes. And if you think someone might also enjoy this story, let them know. Spread the word. This episode was recorded on the traditional lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. So, see you next time. I look forward to exploring more isms and schisms with you.